who will share with us on his opinion on the history of AA.
Good afternoon. My name is Kent Coleman. I'm an alcoholic. The dry date is May 18, 1992. I'm a member of the Venice Group. I have a sponsor. His name is Bob D. He lives here in Las Vegas. It is an honor and a privilege to be asked again to participate in any way in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And here, the more you give, the more you get. Everything's opposite in here, isn't it? Right? The more you give, the more you get. I went my whole life thinking, the more I take, the more I get, right? And that doesn't seem to work very well. So it's an honor and a privilege to be here. So my sponsor asked me to give a talk on history. And so I called my partner, Ralph, who made the statement, "Is this punishment?" Right? So I said it, told Zach. Zach goes, "Is this punishment?" So, feeling bad at this point that I'm being punished, I went to the love of my life, Janelle, and I said, "You know, Ralph and Zach said I'm being punished." And she said, "No, that's not what they meant." She said, "The punishment is for the people who got to sit and listen to you for that long." That's what they meant. Can't you just feel the love in here? I was like 4 months sober. I was down at the club and I said to a guy, "Where's all that love they talking about down here?" But it's an honor and a privilege to be asked to do this. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. And I love the history of Alcoholics Anonymous. Why is it important? Why is AA history important? It happened a long time ago. All them people dead. Why is it important, right? Any time that a society fails is because it never knew or disregarded where it came from. Any society that does not acknowledge and learn from its past is doomed to the same mistakes in the future. That's the reason that it is so important. When I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I was taken through the steps out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Then I was instructed that I was to read three books: Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, AA Comes of Age, and Pass It On. Pass It On second, and then AA Comes of Age last. And my first sponsor was a guy, Bill F. in Lorain, Ohio. And I said, "Why I got to read all that? Ain't nobody else reading it." And his response to me was, "I don't care what everybody else does." He told me that for you to be a participating member of Alcoholics Anonymous, you need to know where it came from, who we are, who we're not, what we do and what we don't do. And you are to take that into the group conscience of your home group. Furthermore, as you sponsor people, I want you to have them do the same thing. See, I'm not expecting the people that I sponsor to pick this stuff up somewhere. When I take people through the book and we go through the steps, we incorporate history in that process. We talk about this happened. How did that happen for you? We identify. I want to share something with you that I've learned about working with people in Alcoholics Anonymous. I know this is going to come as a shock to everybody in this room. But alcoholics are a little bit self-absorbed, right? Selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of the problem. It says in the book, right? I have learned to use that to my advantage. When I can talk about history and help you understand how it not only affects this fellowship, right, that we are part of, that's how we stay sober, stay alive, but also how it impacts your life. How personally, right, the things that happened that led to the birth of our steps, our traditions, our groups, the things that we do, how does that affect your life? When I do that, they eat it up. They eat it up. I do a book study. There's people in here that I sponsor There are people in here who have attended our book study. I incorporate history all the way throughout it. It is a great opportunity. When I get to the end of the book, the page 164, I spend 1 month on the traditions, and I spend about 3 weeks on the concepts. And there is no drop-off in attendance. I used to think, well, after we finish the steps and, you know, the first 164 pages, then they'll come back when we start back at the beginning of the book. No. What I found out is that people in here don't know, but they want to know, and they don't know because they haven't been told. As a sponsor, I am responsible for making sure that the people that I sponsor understand these. I accept that responsibility. And when they read these books, they call me, we talk about it. I sponsor a guy in Holland, and I sent him a copy of AA Comes of Age, and we're talking about it every Sunday. That's what we do here. Okay? My first sponsor used to say, all of the so-called problems that we have in Alcoholics Anonymous are going to go away when we get back to good, responsible sponsorship. And I believe that with all my heart. So I require that of the people that I sponsor as my first sponsor did with me. So today, we're going to have two sessions. First one's going to be about an hour. Then we're going to take a break. Then we're going to come back. This is not an endurance test or to see how much suffering that this is an AA celebration. This is fun, right? So, and you know, when we do this kind of a workshop thing, what we found out, if you take a break and let everybody go to the restroom, get their coffee, get their water and all that, it cuts down on the movement, which cuts down on the distractions to the people around us. So we're going to go about an hour and we have a break. And kind of the way that we're going to go today, what I'm going to talk about in the beginning is going to be more linear. It's going to be about the chain of events that took place, some of the things that took place that led to the formation of the Fellowship Alcoholics Anonymous. And then in the second half, we're going to go to Akron and Cleveland. And look at some things from there. My sponsor, Bob, says, you're a guy who knew guys who knew guys. And I knew guys who knew guys. And I got to meet some people who kind of were guys. Because where I live at is a lot of things happen. And so I get to share some of those things kind of from an experiential standpoint, and I think it'll be fun. So we're going to start talking about the chain of events. I call this the chain. And I'd like to start with a conversation that took place in Zurich, Switzerland. Now, exactly when this conversation took place, I am unsure. I'm going to say this right off the rip. There are people who have dedicated much of their life to studying AA history and to doing AA presentations and AA work. And they can tell you in detail, like, some dates and that kind of thing. I am more focused on what happened more than I am when it happened, right? It's a funny thing about history. Everybody that's involved in it ain't here. So You can't ask, hey, did that really happen then, or when was that, right? And what I found out is when you read a lot of stuff, it was to the best of their recollection because they was old when people asked them about it, right? So they didn't remember, right? So sometime in the mid to late 1920s, or maybe even as late as 1931, there was a fellow, and in our big book, they called him a certain American businessman. We know that man was Roland H. And Roland was a guy who suffered horribly from alcoholism, came from a very wealthy and powerful family in the East, was a successful businessman, was a politician when he was young. I think in 1920, he was like a state senator or something like this. This was a guy who was raised and bred for success, was very, very, very smart, just a successful guy, but he had a problem. He had a problem. He could not control his drinking. So he hit up everybody in the States, right, that he thought could help him. He hit up every cure that was out there, right, to no avail. just couldn't stop. So he ends up going to Switzerland. Now, this will show you how much money. I mean, you got to think about it. I mean, I don't know what it would translate into dollars today. But I always tell people, right, you know how much it costs to go to a good psychiatrist, psychologist, you know, hundreds of dollars an hour. My boy went to the man. He went to the cat, right? Sigmund Freud didn't want nothing to do with it. He went to Jung. When I went to college, I studied Jungian theory. And I know some of y'all did too, right? To this day, recognized as the greatest ever in his field. So he goes there and he places himself under the care of Dr. Jung. And I always say this, like, how would you like to have Carl Gustav Jung crawling around in your head for a year? Right? Crawling around in your head for a year. At the end of a year, he said, I had an understanding of myself at a level and of a depth that I did not believe possible. Absolutely unbelievable, right? Understanding of self that he got from Dr. Jung. Convinced that this newly acquired self-knowledge about himself, the triggers, the past, right? All that stuff, right? I'm good. I'm out of here, man. Thank you, right? Didn't even get out of Europe before he got drunk. You know how we say in AA, once you get here, we don't refer you out anywhere else. There ain't nowhere to go once you done been here, right? We don't make referrals out of AA. Well, you know, dude was like, I've been to the best. I ain't nowhere else to go. Right? And I'm drunk again. So what did he do? He went back to Carl Jung. And he said, man, I just don't understand. And Carl Jung, obviously a very humble guy, gave him this explanation. One of the cold-bloodedest things I think you could say to a guy like, you have the mind of a chronic alcoholic, and I have never, ever seen a person recover who has that kind of thinking to the level that you do. Later on, Dr. Jung said that he worked with a lot of alcoholics, and he estimated his rate of success at 2%. 2%. He said, but I ain't never seen one like you get better. Right? So our boy now has just got crushed, and he's desperate. He said, man, is there nothing? Is there no way that I can beat this thing? And he told him, he said, well, you know, here and there, every now and again, alcoholics have had something called vital spiritual experiences. He said, to me, these things are phenomena, which means a very, very rare occurrence. He's talked about the ideas and an interchange, ideas and emotions, which was once the guiding forces of these people, right, are suddenly cast aside, and a completely new set of conceptions begins to dominate them. He says, so my advice to you is either place yourself under lock and key, get a bodyguard, or you got to find this experience. He told him no further therapy will help you. There was, at this point, something that happened that I believe is vital and crucial. And it is a state of hopelessness. We talk about hitting some kind of bottom. We talk about, and I always say this, the bottom is in the gut. It's not in external circumstances. One of the most miraculous things I believe about the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which I'll talk about later, and the history behind that, is that that is a book that went out through the mail, and if read honestly, has the ability to raise the bottom for somebody, which is the reason why I really believe the book was divinely inspired. I don't think that the people who wrote it had the ability to create something like that. So Roland Hazard returns to the United States and he learns about something called the Oxford Movement. So he goes to this Oxford Movement, and the Oxford Movement was a first century Christian movement that believed a return to first century Christian principles was the answer to the ills and problems of society. It was not a religion. It was a movement. So Roland goes there, and they suggested some actions, and it was things that they were doing. Now, these things were not germane to alcoholics. It was what people who were a part of that movement were doing: self-inventory, confession, restitution to those that you've harmed, and service to others. Four things. So Roland, desperate, engaged in those activities, and the obsession to drink left him. Roland then began to focus his attention on other people coming to the Oxford group who had alcohol problems. Now, the Oxford group wasn't about that, right? They was about society and curing the ills of society, not alcoholics. But Roland thought, man, maybe I could help some people who got what I got. Wasn't too long when he heard about a fellow that he knew from his hometown who was about to be committed for alcoholic insanity. That's a heck of a diagnosis, ain't it? When's the last time you saw somebody and said, hey, man, where you been? Oh, I just got out. What was you in for? Alcoholic insanity. Haven't heard that one in a while. And this guy's name was Ebby. And Ebby had been he'd been involved in a lot of incidents. They were from the same town in Vermont. Ebby, there had been an incident with a shotgun and some crows while he was painting the house. That happened. And then he drove his car through the front of somebody's house, and that happened. And his family had had enough and basically said, we're going to get you off the street before you kill somebody who want to live, because obviously you don't care if you do or not. So Roland and a friend of his show up and petition. This friend of his was Seba G. And petitioned the judge, who was a relative of Seba G., to parole Ebby to them. And the judge said, well, I'll tell you what, you get him out of here, don't bring him back, and you can have him. So off he goes. So they take him to New York. The U.S. headquarters for the Oxford group at that time was Calvary Mission in New York City, where the Reverend Sam Shoemaker presided. And they got Ebby in there, and they got him involved in taking the same actions that Roland had took. And Ebby got sober. One of the things, and they used to use the word conversion. We use spiritual awakening, spiritual experience. But the Oxford group uses the word conversion. And one of the things about somebody, and that's what we have today, right? Spiritual awakening or experience. What's the first thing that comes after that? Enthusiasm, doesn't it? Ready to go save the world. Where they at? Right? I can remember sitting in the meeting, man, on fire. Ready to go find the fellas. I'm going to carry this to the fellas. And the fellas told me where to carry it when I took it to them. I'm going to go say to fellas, right? So, Abby says, who is the most self-destructive, pitiful alcoholic that I know? My boy, Bill W., right there in New York City. And I have to say this to you, right? The feeling on Bill's part was mutual. Bill used to say, if I ever get as bad as Abby, I'll do something about my drinking. When I look at this from a historical perspective, could it be that Abby was the only person that Bill could hear because of their relationship? I don't know the answer to that, but think about that. Like, if you would have went up to Bill Wilson and say, who's the worst you, Abby? Abby T. And if you'd have went to Abby and said, who's the worst? Bill Wilson, hands down, right? Ain't it amazing how God makes this happen? So Abby shows up at Bill's house. I mean, this is recounted in Bill's story in our book, right? Abby shows up, suit pressed, shirt starched, hair slicked back, shoes shined, hat blocked. Knock on the door. Bill opened the door. T-shirt, pair of jeans, two sizes too big, his brother-in-law's house shoes, unshaven, unclean. Abby comes in. Bill's thought was when Abby called, he must have escaped. My boy is out. He must have escaped. He come over here. We can do some drinking and do what? Talk about the good old days as if there ever were any. Right? We call that euphoric recall, don't we? Right? Terrified of the future, horrified by the past. Right? So we look for sanctuary with people like us who sit and lie to each other about something that was supposed to be good. Right. So Bill offered Abby a drink. Abby said, I'm not drinking today. Bill's like, man, what's wrong with you? What got into you? Abby said, I got religion. And that struck a nerve with Bill. Bill Wilson's life, he was raised by his grandparents. His father left the family when Bill was 10 years old. His mom went to become an osteopathic doctor in Boston. So Bill was raised by his grandparents, his mother's mother and father. And what I've read about his grandfather was a very introverted guy, really, really quiet, wasn't comfortable around a lot of people. but was a pretty intelligent guy. When it came to God, religion, that kind of thing, he was pretty apathetic. Kind of said, well, look, there's some kind of power, scientific power. It's the only way you can kind of explain gravity, the movement of the sun and the star, right, and all that, but not a power that some preacher could tell me I can access. I've always believed that, based on my experience, anyway, people have a conception, whatever it may be, of a power greater than themselves. And it could be, you know, from the church, it could be that there is nothing and anything in between. But it's what they were taught. It's what they were taught. So this idea of your own conception of God, which we get to later, is a real icebreaker for many of us. Personally, like, when Roland Hazard talked to Dr. Young, and Dr. Young said, you got to have some kind of religious or spiritual rearrangement, right? Roland said, I go to church. This should be easy for me. And the doctor destroyed, I like how Bill used the word, destroyed his hope by telling him that suiting up and showing up is not sufficient to produce the experience that is needed. Reciting scripture and reading books is not sufficient to produce the experience that is needed. On a personal note, I was raised in the church. I was taught those things. I could recite scripture, chapter, and verse. So I was raised, the kind of family I come from. So when I come to AA, but I'm confused because I've gone to church and nothing happened. Right? I'm confused. I'm as confused as Bill was, only his experience was different than mine. Are you following me? Now I'm confused. And so I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I had a conversation with my sponsor, and I'll talk about him later. His name was Neil C., and he sponsored my sponsor, and Neil's sponsor was Bob Smith, who was a co-founder of AA. And I'm going to tell you what, I told Neil, I said, man, I know the Bible, I know all about God, I'm good to go. And I'm going to tell you what he told me. He looked at me and he said, Smiley, that was his nickname for me. He said, Smiley, you know more than you understand. He said, you know more than you understand. He told me, he said, understanding comes about as a result of experience. We grow in understanding and effectiveness through living these principles, not reading about them. You know more than you understand. So when Abby said he got religion, Bill is set back. But something happened in Bill that day. Because there's something here in Alcoholics Anonymous that happens when one of us talks to another one of us from a place that other people can't. And when you sit and you look at it, you can't deny it. You can't deny. He could not like what Ebby said, but he couldn't deny what he saw. And Ebby made the point blank declaration that God had done for him what he couldn't do for himself. His human will had failed. And Bill could not deny that. See, let me share something with you. When you talk to me about you, I can't deny it. Totally disarmed Bill. He didn't come in there and say, Bill, you ought to be ashamed of yourself. Look at the drinking you're doing. Look at the ripple effect of your drinking. He came in there and he talked about himself. And there is something that happens when we come together. This is a significant moment to this day that is still the basis of what we do, is it not? Y'all reach me when no one else could. I sat in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous in Xenia, Ohio in 1992, and I heard people who were perfect strangers talk about things in here that I could not believe they knew. Alcoholism is a disease of isolation. Think about Bill in the kitchen. I got some booze upstairs, hid in the toilet. Where Lois? Right? I'm straight. Right? Everything gone. This a taker, it ain't a giver. Read Bill's story. Read Bill's story. The progression of alcoholism, but the power of obsession. What did it? Education? Down the tubes. Significant relationships? Family? Down the tubes. Career? Down the tubes. Health? Down the tubes. Sanity? Down the tubes. Yet holding on that somehow, someday, I can once again control and enjoy this thing. This thing in me that untreated will take me to the grave, this belief that it's an answer and not a problem. And it's killed most of my friends. I've been here a while now and they're gone. My best friend died December 3rd. Could not, would not see our way of life. My friend Ralph talks about the ripple effects of sobriety. Family, friends, health, happiness, right? All this stuff, grandkids, all this wonderful stuff, right? The ripples, right? What about the ripples on the other side? Eats up your family and friends. They let Bill and Lois, her folks, Dr. Burnham, his wife, let Bill and Lois up in the house. What happened? My wife and father-in-law became ill. Mother-in-law died. Lose the house. Let me in your house. Bill was so drunk he couldn't go to his mother-in-law's funeral. A lot of people don't know that one. Bill didn't even go to the funeral. Too drunk. So as Bill sit there that day listening to Abby, something in here. Maybe he got something. I don't know. But I said, what do we do in here? We hear it all the time, right? How is this relevant? Thanks. Stay with me for a minute. You ever hear the phrase, plant a seed? Plant a seed. Epi planted a seed that day. He didn't force himself on Bill. You know. Just came to share with him. Right? You need me, man. You know where I'm at. I'll check on you. Gone. Things continue to get worse for Bill, and he ends up going into the hospital. It's called Towns Hospital. One of the things that I love about this part of AA history is how Bill Wilson ends up being the guy with all the pieces of the pie. He's the first guy with all the pieces of the pie, right? He goes to Towns Hospital where he meets this kind doctor, right, who gives him some information, right, that he never had before, some understanding and some clarity about alcoholism. He teaches Bill about this allergy of the body, right? Once alcohol comes into my system, it creates a phenomenon of craving, right? And my ability to stop or control my drinking is gone. Right? This allergy of the body. Dr. Silkworth also talked to Bill about the obsession of the mind, right? That this is repeated over and over and over, right? My mind keeps taking me back. Well, why does my mind keep taking me back? And he talked about something that goes on spiritually with us. This restlessness, this irritability, this discontentedness, right, that continues to get me to seek relief, right? And where do I get my relief? I get my relief from taking a drink, right? Right. And it says this is repeated over and over, and unless it's alcoholic, has what we call a vital spiritual experience, there's very little hope for his recovery. Story of my life. My sponsor didn't mean to, and I'm like, damn, who wrote this? Somebody been following me around. Restless, irritable, and discontented, right? Spiritual issue, right? So Bill gets this information from Dr. Silkworth. And what is it? Self-knowledge, right? Got some knowledge about myself now. Now I understand. Now I understand why my willpower don't work against this thing. Now I understand why once I get started, I can't stop. I understand all that now. What is it that Dr. Silkworth did not give Bill Wilson? Didn't give him a solution. This is what Dr. Silkworth told him. The only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. Meaning you can't start the cycle in motion until you take the first one. How do you not take the first one? How do you not take the first one? So Bill has that information. Then he gets this, he has this visit from Ebby. Ebby gives him another piece of the pie. Ebby talked about this formula that they were using, right? Inventory, confession, restitution, service to others, right? Ooh, another piece of the pie, right? So on his last trip to Towns Hospital, and there's a lot of stuff that happened in between there, right? Bill going down to the mission to check out the Oxford movement and getting up and making a fool out of himself down there. He talked about, you know, Ebby comes see Bill quite a bit of, quite a few times. And he came one time with old Shep Cornell. And Bill said, Shep Cornell, he said he was a panty waist socialite, a sherry drinker. Something else new came in AA history that day. Judgment. We started judging that day. Panty waist socialite, right? Bill like, man, I can't identify with him. I identify with Ebby, though. So Bill is back in the hospital. Armed with some, he got the pie. He got the pie. So he calls Ebby. Ebby come down. He said, Abby, run that formula down for me again, man. Right? If you read Bill's story, they did some stuff. They did a little bit of work. Bill said, I fully acquainted him with my problems and deficiencies. We made a list of the folk I had harmed and I've become willing to make amends to them. Right? Done some work. Talked about turning our will and our life over to the care of God. Talking about seeking God's guidance. Common sense would thus become uncommon sense. Some things happen. Did some work. You recognize all 12 steps in that part of the book too, don't you?
Right.
Even though we didn't have mentors in tangible form. How about Dr. Bob said it? Dr. Bob, how did people stay sober before the steps were written? Dr. Bob said, we had them, we just hadn't wrote them. Because we know that they are necessary for us to obtain and maintain sobriety. Don't that make sense? So they had all of it. Bill, his agnosticism so deep. Abby said, why don't you choose your own conception of God? Bang! Something broke. My first sponsor said to me, he said, man, because I'm confused. Right? Like I go to church, don't want to happen. I don't want to, how did this work? And this is what he told me. He said, pick up that pencil and that paper, and I want you to write down what you want to pray to. Forget everything else. Just write down what you want to pray to. Real simple. Keep it simple. Loving, caring, understanding, and forgiving is what I wrote down. He said to me, that's a great start. He said, and that's what we're going to pray to. He said, Ken, I want you to take everything you think you know, and I say you think you know, because obviously you don't know much. And let's just take these simple directions and apply it and see where it takes us. Okay. So Bill is like, I don't have to consider anybody else's conception. A power that loves me, a power that cares for me, a power that don't punish me, just loves me. Bill lays in the bed and says, if there's a God, show yourself. Room lights up. Wind blow through the room. Bill said, it's the God of the preachers. Didn't happen that way for me. Because obviously I didn't need that. But Bill Wilson, remember when Dr. Silkworth told Lois, he's either going to die in DTs or he'll develop a wet brain, perhaps within a year, and join the living dead. But he done. Apparently, that's what Bill needed. God come the way God need to come when he need to come. But I ain't never seen God not come. Never. Bill said, this is the God of the preachers. Called Dr. Silkworth. Said, man, let me tell you what happened. Dr. Silkworth, listen. And in the big book, you know, Dr. Silkworth replied and said, you know, this is better than what you had. Anything is better than what you had. You got to hold on to this, you know. If you read some of the other stuff that Bill said later, you know, Silkworth told him that you've had some kind of spiritual conversion. But any way that you want to term it, this is what you need. This is what you're after. Right? So another significant moment in the history of Alcoholics Anonymous is coming. And in this moment, picture laying in his hospital bed. Now, I know everybody, how many people in here have been in a detox bed or some kind of hospital? Raise your hands for me. Right? And I know every single one of you, when you was laying in the detox bed, thought, boy, I like to carry this message to others. And see a chain of people getting so. Man, you know what I was thinking in detox? I hope they have the orange Jell-O instead of the green. I don't like the green Jell-O. Oh, yeah, I'm worried about y'all, all right. Bill Wilson lays in the bed and thinks to himself, man, again, the enthusiasm, the God within, right, of that new man. Don't temper that. When you got a new one lit up, feed it. That's what my sponsors did to me. Feed it. We're going to get you into detox. We're going to get you into the jail meeting. Feed it. Maybe I could help somebody else. Laying in the hospital bed. I had the opportunity when I first came to AA to make the acquaintance of and spend time with Dr. Bob's daughter, Sue. I told you my grand sponsor was Neil, and Neil lived with Dr. Bob and Ann off and on for a year and a half. And when I was new, he told me I used to go to Thursday men's so I could sit next to Neil. And let me just say something about it, because I'm going to talk about a few people. If you didn't know them and you didn't ask them, you didn't know they knew these people. They didn't talk about this stuff. They didn't talk about, Bill Wilson used to come, we'd go out, eat. They didn't talk about none of that. Neil was my grand sponsor. That's what I knew. I knew a lot of people respected him. When he came in the room, you could tell, right? Neil died. He was 59 years sober. But he would tell me, I would go to Thursday Men and sit between him and my other sponsor, Kenny Bombalicki. Bob, Ralph, and them knew Kenny. A lot of people here knew Kenny. And I would sit between them, and Neil said to me, I want you to go to Dr. Bob's house. It was my answer. For what? He ain't there. He said, I know he's not there, Smiley. I want you to go to Dr. Bob's house. Go on a Saturday, right? And I went to Dr. Bob's house, and I rang the doorbell. I don't know, you're supposed to just walk in. And the door opened, and there was a guy standing there. His name was Joe G, and he was an old-timer from Akron. He was the first person that I met whose eyes sparkled and shined. And he said, come on in here. And I told him, I said, my grandfather told me to come over here. And he said, who is that? And I told him. And his smile went this big. And he toured me through that house. And he taught me some things about our history. And I started to go there on Saturdays. And Sue would come on Saturdays a couple times a month. And at that time, they were remodeling the house, and she knew what the house used to look like. So she used to work with them, like the wallpaper, this color, the carpet, try to put it back as close as they could. And at that time, didn't have a house next door or the other house. It was just Dr. Bob's house. So it's kind of a museum kind of feel at that time. And we would sit behind the house after the house closed at 3 o'clock, and I would ask her questions. And she would just laugh. She's very patient, very kind to me. And I asked her about the early people, right, all the stuff that happened. And I asked her about Bill Wilson. Big smile. Do what she told me. She said, I know God sent Bill to do this. She said, because Bill had a gift, and he had it before Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was a gift of foresight. She said, Bill Wilson was a man who could look at something as it exists today and know what it was going to look like 20 years from now. Served him well on Wall Street, didn't it? What was Bill's job? He was a speculator. What did he do? He traveled to companies. He got their information, right? And then he made investment recommendations based on what he thought that company would be going for. He had a gift. It was a gift of foresight. She said, Bill could look down the road further than anybody that I ever knew. Bill Wilson laying in the bed, maybe just maybe, I can help some, he can help one, he can help one. In Akron, they used to say, each one teach one. Each one teach one. So Bill come up out of that bed and set out to work with others. 6 months of attempting to help others. My sponsor, Bob, said, I don't know where he got the number, but you work with about 96 of them, Bob, something like that. Something like that, right? Who knows? Might have been 50, might have been 500, I don't know. He worked with others. Nobody got sober. Lois, working department store, they barely getting by. Bill got to thinking, you know, maybe I need to go to work. God, this ain't happening. And two conversations took place without which I do not believe we would be here today. The first one took place between him and Lois. He shared this sentiment with Lois. He said, I tried. Ain't nobody getting sober. Ain't nobody getting no help. You know? And Lois said, yeah, that may be true. She said, but I can tell you one thing. You sober. And Bill Wilson, you ain't been sober 6 months since I knew you. Boom, number one. Second conversation takes place with Dr. Silkworth. He go down there and tell Silkworth the same thing. You know, I come around here, ain't nobody getting this. I think I'm about through with this. Dr. Silkworth said, you know, I've been watching you. You know, you come in here preaching. You're in here talking about God coming in the room, white light. Bill, these people think you crazy. They want some of what you've been drinking. So I got a suggestion for you. Instead of coming with this heavy-handed spiritual God approach, let's try this. Stay with me for a minute. Let's talk drunk to a drunk. Let's share your experience. Tell what happened to you. Then, once you've established identification. I come back to that again, because it started really when Ebby came to see Bill. And I talked about alcoholism being a disease of isolation, and it don't matter if you're sitting in this room right now with 1,000 people. It don't matter. Anybody been in a whole, have you been in a concert with 10,000 people but been alone? I have. Have you been at the Thanksgiving dinner and Christmas dinner table with your family and been alone? I have. It has nothing to do with physical proximity to other human beings. It is an internal condition. I'm different. Nobody thinks like me, feels like me, going through what I'm going through. Y'all don't understand. And then have somebody sit across the table from you or sit in an AA meeting and say something and open you up. Open you up. This identification. So what ended up happening? Is what Dr. Silkworth told him to do. And Bill said, okay. So now Bill is armed with even more. He knows what the problem is, piece of the pie. Bill knows a solution, piece of the pie. Bill knows how to make a successful approach, piece of the pie. Bill Wilson ready to go to Akron. Bill Wilson ready to go to Akron. And that's where we're going to go when we come back after the break. Thank you.